The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 11, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on February 2nd, 2014, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yeyatamang prapadyante. Tangstataiva bhajam yaham. Mama vartmanu vartante. Manushya parta sarvashaha. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Sanaprita. Purport. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence and as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocation of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists, who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of a living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service of the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them who are not firmly situated, even in the impersonal existence, return to this material world to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yageshvara. And those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy. Alone and all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as stated in Srimad Bhagavad Gita 2.3.10. Akama sarvakamo va mokshakama udaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushang puram. Whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. So everyone is dependent on Krishna for the results of their activities. And the closer you get to Krishna, the better results you get. It's like you're in the cold, and the closer you get to the fire, the warmer, the more comfortable you get, you see. The impersonalists, they want to enter into the fire. That's their foolishness. They want to enter into the fire of Krishna's transcendental effulgence. The devotees, they keep enough distance so they can have a relationship with Krishna. And actually, they're closer to Krishna. Because the effulgence of the Lord is the goal of the impersonalists, but the form of the Lord himself, to have a loving relationship with that Supreme Person in his transcendental form, that is the goal of the devotees. So the devotees are closer than the impersonalists. Wanting to become one with God is a lower level position than becoming the lover of God. And if you think about it, I mean, who wants to live in a world without love? You see? You want to live in a world without love, where there's no love anywhere? How miserable that would be. You see? Everybody thrives on love. Everyone likes to be loved, give love, you see. That's what makes happiness, to have loving relationship. So to be in an existence where there's no love, that's not very nice. Therefore, after some time, the persons who achieve this impersonal Brahman effulgence, they fall down again to material existence. They come back again to material existence. Because it's actually not the natural thing. I mean, we are people. By our very nature, we are persons. Persons are meant to have loving relationships. And to have a loving relationship with the Supreme Person, that's the perfection of loving relationship. So one may take though some path of impersonalism simply due to having been burned by so many broken relationships in this world. He says, well, I've tried this relationship, I tried that relationship, I was frustrated again and again, so now I give up all relationships, you see. I'm a rock, I'm an island, I touch no one and no one touches me. One songwriter described this desire for impersonalism in this way. But that's not practical. Instead of denying love, if you're frustrated with love, instead of denying love, find the perfection of love, you see. Love is not bad. The perversion of love, that is bad, lust. But love in its original pure form is a very, very wonderful thing. So the devotees, they come to that position. In other words, Krishna consciousness is the perfection of loving relationship. Because when you establish a loving relationship with that Supreme Person, who is indeed the source of everything, the root of the entire existence, when you connect in love with that Supreme Person, then you become connected with everyone and everything. When you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. When you feed your belly, do you not feed your entire body? When you feed your belly, your entire body is nourished. So when you give loving service to Krishna, the Supreme Person, then you become satisfied and you give perfect satisfaction to everyone. Of course, they may not realize it, how they're being satisfied. But actually, you're giving satisfaction to everyone. Because you're acting for the ultimate benefit of every living entity. In other words, a life of Krishna consciousness is a sublime life of transcendental ecstasy, of transcendental bliss. Because now you can act perfectly for the well-being of everyone. Your own well-being is automatically included. You take the best care of yourself, you take the best care of your wife, your husband, your kids, your parents, your friends, your countrymen, all the animals, the plants. When you connect in loving relationship with God, then now you become perfect in relationship with every single living entity in all of existence. And that's a very sublime position to be in. There's no more lust, there's no more exploitation, there's no more animosity. It's pure service to all living beings. All tinges of greed become completely washed away by the process of Krishna consciousness. Of course, it takes time to come to that stage. But even in the beginning stage, one feels great relief. Just like you're sick, you're not completely recovered, but you're starting to get better. You feel really good. Wow, I'm recovering. You see? So as soon as one takes up this process of Krishna consciousness, even though you're not on the perfectional stage yet, you're still a neophyte devotee, still beginning the process, you feel great happiness. Great joy is there. Because you can feel how the process is working. You can feel how that former tendency you had to exploit to take advantage of others is now transforming into serving others and helping others. So it's very, very, very satisfying feeling. This verse is very significant because Krishna is saying, "Is all surrendered unto me." Everyone surrendered to Krishna? They haven't even heard of him. How they can be surrendered to him, one might ask. Well, they are. They just don't realize it, because actually everything is the energy of Krishna. He has two divisions of this energy. He has his spiritual energy and his material energy. So those who are pursuing the path of material progress, of material sense gratification, they are surrendered to Krishna's material energy. And those who are taking the pathway of spiritual awakening, you see, they are surrendering to the spiritual energy of Krishna. Either way, just like here in Texas, we have different state institutions where you can go to the University of Texas or you can go to the Huntsville Prison. They're both institutions of the state of Texas. You can follow the rules and regulations of the University of Texas or the rules and regulations of the Huntsville Prison, you see. So, which is a better position to be in? You want to be a university student or an inmate in the prison? It's like, you want to be in the state pen or you want to go to Penn State? So, that's your choice. You can serve the spiritual energy or the material energy. You have your choice. Either way, you will be serving. You cannot avoid being a servant. That's your nature to be a servant. That's why if they have no one else to serve, they get a dog or a cat to serve their dog and cat, and they take the dog for a walk, you see. Or the dog takes them for a walk, actually, you see. My dog wants to go for a walk. I have to take him on a walk now because he wants to go on a walk. I have to serve my dog. And then he passes a stool, they pick it up, and they bring it home. In what city have we saw them doing that? Toronto?
They do it everywhere.
In Austin now? Everyone?
They do it.
I pick up I carry the. We saw in one city they're picking up the stool of the dog in a little baggie, you know.
Toronto.
Bring it. Toronto, we saw.
I've seen it in many places.
Yeah. So if one doesn't want to serve God, then one will serve dog, you see. Servant you must be. DOG or DOG. GOD or DOG. You must serve. So why not take the serving tendency that we have, the innate nature we have to serve, and make it perfect, you see. That's called Krishna consciousness. You take your service propensity and you make it perfect. When you actually serve Krishna, then you become the best servant of your wife, your husband, your kids, your parents. You become the best servant because you see them as they actually are. Right now in material consciousness, according to what the scientists tell us, we're just a bunch of robots. We're not just machines. You know, going on by there was a random combination of material elements, and it produced all these machines running around, bumping into each other, and you're just a machine, you see. So that's a very bleak understanding. How you can love a machine? There's no person in there. It's just a machine. So the material scientists are teaching us this distorted view of reality where love doesn't have any meaning anymore. It's just some chemical reactions going on. There's no such thing as love, actually. So we don't buy it. In spite of all of their advancement, like the greatest scientist Einstein, he had to die. Was he able to present his death by his scientific formulas, scientific advancement? No. There are higher laws at work than what the scientists have yet to understand. And these laws are revealed in the Vedic scriptures. And if one lives in harmony with these laws, then you actually become immortal. You transcend the bodily plane of existence. You enter in your eternal identity beyond this material body. Your material body is just a covering. It's like you have I see you have a green shirt on today. Are you Mr. Green Shirt? No, that's not your identity. So just as you have a green shirt, you have a young boy's body. Does that mean you're a young boy? Not really, you see. These bodies are also just garments that the soul is wearing at the present time. I was wearing a little toddler's body, then a little kid's body, riding my tricycle around the block. You know, then I graduated to a bicycle, and then a little motorcycle, and then a car, you know. But that's not me. These different bodies are not me. Now I have an old man's body. It's not me. It's this body that I have now is no more me than the body I had when I was a little kid in the cradle, in the crib, back in 1948. I remember being in the crib in 1948 and watching TV. It had just been introduced into America, a little black and white tube there. I remember watching the TV when I was about 1 year old in the crib. But, that wasn't me. That body was not me, nor is this 66-year-old man's body me. It's just the covering. The actual self is the eternal spiritual being within. You see? So when you actually reconnect by loving devotion with that supreme person, then you become, you realize, you're, when you realize, in other words, when you realize the supreme self or Krishna or God, then you realize yourself also automatically. When the sun rises in the morning, you can see everything very clearly. I don't need my flashlight when the sun rises, you see. And at night, I need my flashlight to get around. But when the sun rises, I see everything. So when you become Krishna conscious, you can see everything. You can see who you are. You can see who everybody else is also. You can see everything as it is. You become perfect in your transcendental vision of everything when you become Krishna conscious. And therefore you can act perfectly in every situation because you see exactly what's going on, exactly what's happening. The materialists have a very limited superficial understanding of what's happening in the world. Their understanding is very limited and very superficial and therefore incomplete and imperfect. And therefore they don't know how to solve the problems. You see, they don't realize these problems like excessive cold, excessive heat, excessive water, or lack of water, or disease and terrorism and crime and, you know, all kinds of problems. There's an easy solution for all of this stuff. But they're trying to solve it through material means. You see? By manipulating the material nature, which they have a very limited power to do that. They're trying to solve it by manipulating the material nature. They don't understand. All you have to do is reconnect with Krishna. Just like there's a little, just imagine a group of people, there's little babies screaming and crying, you see. Everybody tries to pacify a little baby, and nobody can succeed in doing it. But when they put the baby back to the mother, immediately he's satisfied, you see. So all we have to do is get back to our mother. He's back to Krishna. He's the mother and father of everything. All we have to do, we try so many ways to solve the problems of the world, you know. Well, we got terrorism. Well, let's have the TSA, you know. Or the home, what's it called, the home security, they call that the home something? Homeland Security Department. Yeah, we're going to solve the terrorism problem with the Homeland Security Department. And then they have the TSA, and we find out the TSA is robbing us when they move our stuff is the belt. They steal our iPad, and they steal our cash. You know, especially if you're technicals, they're actually ripping us off. So, you know, it's a crazy world. They don't understand how to solve the problems because they're trying to do it through material means instead of actually going to the root cause of the problem. In other words, they're trying to treat the symptoms. Instead of actually understanding the root cause of all the problems, which is our disconnection from God, they say, here is no God. We are God with our science, you see. So they're not going to ever solve the problem. It's not going to happen. But this Krishna consciousness movement, you see, it can solve all the problems of the whole world. And this movement will catch on. Prabhupada said it will become the most popular movement in the world. It's right here in the beginning, right here in the Gita, Prabhupada says, this will become the most popular movement in the entire world because people are fed up, they're frustrated, they can see the government men are cheating me. They don't trust the leaders anymore. People are becoming completely frustrated with the modern day leaders. They can't solve these problems. They're not able to solve the problems. So gradually people are going to realize that this Krishna consciousness movement is actually offering all the solution for all the world's problems, and that people are going to come on board in huge numbers and down the road here, and the millions of people will be joining this movement all over the world. You'll see it happen if you live long enough, if you take birth a few more times after this. It's going to happen. You may not, how much we'll see in our lifetime, I cannot say, but Will Prabhupada said this will become the most popular movement in the world, and it will become the most popular movement in the whole world. Because there's no other solution except for Krishna consciousness to solve the problems, and the problems are getting worse every day. They talk about global warming. Well, actually, it's an imbalance. Actually, we're having the most cold. We're having an increase of cold now here. It's like the cold is moving down from the Arctic. It's getting colder here and warmer there. It's like, you know, things are getting messed up. Everything's getting, the whole balance is getting messed up because of sinful activities. Because we're violating the laws of nature. Nature is punishing us. You see? The worst drought in the history of California is happening right now. The worst drought ever in the history of the state of California right now. So, can your scientists manufacture water? No. We're dependent on God for the water, you see. Comes from the rains. We're dependent on God for that, you see. So we have to learn how to live back in harmony with the Lord, you see. And then everything will come automatically.
Scientists are trying to make the air to breathe, but how much air they can make? I hear that they are trying to make the power because Beijing is so polluted, so they are trying to make some gas mask or something that everybody can wear.
Yeah, just like, I mean, 20 years ago, we could never dream we'd all be drinking bottled water, you see. But just imagine another 20 years, we're all breathing bottled air. The atmosphere gets so bad, and everyone goes around with bottled air, breathing bottled air. It was inconceivable 20 years ago, everybody was drinking bottled water. We couldn't think of it. Why? It's all in the tap. Why do you eat bottled water? But now everyone drinks bottled water, wherever you go, bottled water. So bottled air can easily become the next standard. Bottled air. Now Delhi is the most polluted city in the whole world. New statistics is the most polluted city. If you live, you're just breathing that air, you'll die early. You see, just living in Delhi, you're shortening your lifespan just by living in Delhi or in Beijing. Huh? Beijing is number two now. Delhi is number one. Latest statistics have come in. So we're creating a situation, we're creating cities where just to live in that city, you're being poisoned, but the city itself is poisoning you. And we think it's an advancement of civilization. You see? So it's all due to the fact that we've lost our connection with Krishna, or God, you see. As the Archbishop of Canterbury in the Episcopalian of the Church of England, he said, they want the kingdom of God without God, but they cannot have it. You see. They want to enjoy the kingdom of God, but get God out, you see. Doesn't work. If you want to live in a heavenly atmosphere, you can't kick God out. As soon as you kick God out, your heaven will turn into hell. You see, turn into a hell. So we wanted to kick God out. When I was a kid growing up here in the U.S., we even had prayers every day in the public schools. Yeah, but then some lady from Austin thought, this is not very nice. Madeline O'Hare. Let's get the prayer out of the schools. She didn't want her kid to have to hear a prayer in school. So the Supreme Court thought, well, we don't want your kid to be disturbed by the prayer. So we won't let, to solve your kid's problem, we could have let him go to another room during the prayer, but instead we'll just ban prayer over the whole country. They could have said, let's have a special room in the school for the kids who don't want to hear the prayer. They can go to that room, the non-prayer room, you see. They can, you know, do whatever they want. They can listen to some rock and roll music or something, whatever they like during the prayer session. But, you know, but they said, no, we will solve your kid's problem of not having to hear a prayer. We won't let any children have prayer in the whole country. So to solve this, so this one little child is not disturbed by prayer, we're going to tell these millions of other children they cannot pray. They cannot have a prayer at school anymore. And they call this the progress of civilization, you see. So they kicked out the prayer. What came in? Drugs and guns. They're wondering, why we have so much problems with this kids going to school and shooting? Why even two little kids, went to their grandfather's gun cabinet, they got some rifles, and they went to the school and pulled the fire alarm, and they shot, got out behind a bush, and they shooting teachers and just shooting people. Little children doing these things, you see. Little children shooting teachers and kids just for fun, you see. And they think this is an advancement. We've gotten the prayer out of the school now. We're advancing, you see. So we need to have a religious revival. Not one sect of religion, but the science of religion, you see. The principle of that there is a supreme being, and we have to develop love for him. Hindus are welcome, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, everyone. It just develop saintly character, you see, of love for God and love for all of his creatures. This is what we need, a religious revival in this country and all over the world. It's the only thing that will solve the problems. But now there are people trying to get In God We Trust taken off the dollar bill, you see. Because they find it disturbing to them. It disturbs my mind. It agitates my mind to see In God We Trust. So you have to take it off the dollar bill because it agitates my mind to see it. And every time I see that, I just get agitated. When I see In God We Trust, I can't handle it anymore. And so you got to take it off the dollar bills to give me a little peace of mind. You see? This is what we're dealing with in this country.
The reason behind this is that they are scared. But they're doing all sinful activities, so they're scared about it.
Yeah, that's the bottom line is they don't want to have to. They don't want to think that they have to be punished for their sins because it would be too agitating. Right now, I'm enjoying like anything, and the thought that I might have to be judged at the time of death, it spoils the fun. So. Better just to pretend there's nothing out there and I can go on enjoying forever until I finally is all over, you see. Enjoy with as much gusto as you can and as long as you can. But, you see, it's like the animal in the forest, he's being attacked by a predator and he can't outrun it, so he just closes his eyes to pretend it's not there. So they just want to close their eyes. Oh, there is no God. There is no God. There is no God. But death will come and they will be grabbed by the constables of Yamraj, the god of death. They'll be taken off to punishment. You see, it's going to happen. Everyone who violates the laws of the Lord, they will be punished very severely for every sinful activity they committed. So they don't want to deal with that, so they just want to deny it. But the thing is, it's very wonderful to live in harmony with the Lord. It's a wonderful life. It's a happy life. So if one can teach these people to follow these Bhagavad Gita instructions, they'll have the happiest, most sublime joyful life, and there's no fear of death for such a person. Death for them is a stepping stone into a wonderful, even more wonderful. They'll have a wonderful life here of Krishna consciousness, and death will be a stepping stone into a more wonderful life, you see. It's just so we hope and pray these people will come to their senses and realize that why deny God's existence? Why do this? There's no reason to do it. You're just causing yourself to be miserable. It's like a criminal says, there is no government. I can do whatever I want. There is no government. Well, he's going to be caught sooner or later and be punished for all of his criminal activities. Denying the government may be a convenient rationale for doing whatever he wants to do, but he will be caught because there is a government. There also is a supreme government of Krishna. And one will be caught sooner or later and pay the price for all of the sinful activities he did. But you don't have to worry about it. If you just take up a pure life of following the teachings of the Gita, you don't have to worry about this stuff. You'll be blessed by Krishna. Every day you'll feel how the mercy and the blessings are showering on you. Every day you'll feel that. You'll have a fearless life of complete happiness. So now we can have some questions, and Vishnupriya Devi Dasi will answer the questions today. Question?
Good day, so when we get liberated, we say we are full of knowledge in the Krishna Loga. But the people, the Mayavadis who go to Brahma Jyoti, are they considered having, full of knowledge?
If they are not in full of knowledge, because they are partial. There is three levels of understanding God. That's impersonal, then Paramatma, and then coming to Bhagavan. If they have full knowledge, anybody who has full knowledge, they'll come to realize Krishna directly and have a relationship. Those who go to Brahma Jyoti, they don't have full knowledge. So that is the reason they cannot have that relationship, personal relationship. To have relationship with anybody is the highest knowledge. So that's why they don't have full knowledge. It's midway, you can say, impersonal. They are the first category. And then the second stage is one who knows this, sees Paramatma within the heart. They are also not complete, but one who knows the personal, they have all the knowledge, full knowledge, 100%.
No question?
Every day we're usually surrounded by people who discourage God and don't want God. But so how do we avoid their influence?
How do you avoid their influence? It's by not taking their association. Association makes it what you take the association. If a person takes association with drunkard, they will become drunk, or gambling together, they become gamble. So if somebody who is against God, we should say, okay, thank you very much. You can go on chanting. You don't have to take their advice. You have to take the advice of the learned people who has God consciousness and who gives you the right path. Because those who don't have that knowledge, you cannot take advice and cannot be associating too much with them. Otherwise, you will be automatically be affected by them. Because if they are doing nonsense, so one day you will think, okay, maybe they are saying to me, I will do it little bit. If somebody is smoking, then they will encourage you, take here, take this cigarette. It feels good, it's cool. And I will try it a little. Here, just try a little. You see? So that's what happens. So we can be very nice to them, friendly to them, but we don't hear from them so much.
Question in the back.
If your family is not supportive of Krishna consciousness, how would you deal with that?
Yes. Family is not supportive. Then you can do on your own. Family is not supportive. You can start slowly. So they think that you are doing good things. You can start slowly.
Every step of the way you're discouraged by, you know, satirical remarks like, oh, doesn't your Bhagavad Gita say this? What is being
taught? Well, the family members are not going to hear from their small kids. It's just that different ways we have to approach them, giving them prasadam. So their mentality can become purified. We cannot enforce Krishna consciousness on anybody. But we have to go in like a needle, give them different way. Give prasadam first, and chant your japa, chant your kirtan, do keep doing that. That nobody can stop. They will love it. So if you go on doing that, the atmosphere becomes purified, and that atmosphere will have the influence on their mentality also, consciousness. So that is it. But if you tell them, now you must do this, it does not work. You have to go gradually with the family members. If you are living with them and depending on them, it's a little tough. Some are very fortunate. Their family members are Krishna conscious. Some are very fortunate and they encourage. This is the age of Kali Yuga, where everybody is, the families are parents, they are not doing their duty. They get the children, but they don't do the duty. According to the Bhagavatam, the parents should be doing their duties to, and the kings, the department heads and all that, they should train their dependents how to be delivered from this cycle of birth and death. But they don't do that duty, the highest duty. So that is the problem. You had something?
Yes, ma'am. I figure that if they see positive change in you, that you give off good vibrations to them, whether they like it or not, and they may eventually want some of what you're getting.
There is this constant resistance. One faces, you know.
Yeah.
You are married? You are married or? Married?
Yeah.
So you can just, you must be the main cook, so you should cook nice prasadam. Very nice, very palatable dishes so that the husband can become very pleased. And gradually his heart changes, you see, by prasadam. With prasadam, even the non-devotee can change, so like outsiders, not the family members, but you can do that. The first prayer space is prasadam.
Ramanda, we heard in the class that we're being punished by the laws of nature. But it seems that the intention of those who are manipulating nature, trying to create some solutions, they might not be aware that of the ultimate solution, but their intention is good. They want to give pure air, pure water, safe, secure situation through military armament and so on. So their intention is right. So why are they being punished?
Their intention is, they may think their intention is good, but why in the first place to pollute the place?
They didn't know. They didn't know.
That's what is ignorance is no excuse. Like you can say you go into somebody's house and you pick up the book or because took out something, okay? I didn't know that it was your house, but I took it something. What will happen? You will be punished from the owner. Because it's not yours. Whether your intention was good or bad, you have taken something from someone. You have just gone like, now unknowingly you thought this car is mine. And you opened the car and drove off. What will happen? That happens. A lot of people are smuggling the cars from the owner parking lot and very places. Now in New York, so many cars are smuggled out. So what happens? They just take it. I can use it. So what happens to those people? They are punished. Their intention was good, okay, I can drive this car, nice car. So ignorance is no bliss. You can do so many things, say, okay, nobody is watching me, but there are so many witnesses. These are on a lower level, all the living entities are witnesses. Then higher level, this police, securities and all that are there. But then gradually the government level, then one day he will be caught. He may enjoy for some time, but then one day he will be caught and he will be punished. So we are polluting the atmosphere. So it is when God has given us pure thing, okay, then we manipulate it and make it contaminated. So who is going to suffer? With a good intention or bad God, he is giving the pure air. You pollute the air and then you want to manufacture something. Do you think you are better than God to make a pure air? It's some chemicals. And when you put those chemicals all the time, what will happen? How long you can survive? So how their intention is good to give you the chemical-made air? How long? So this is the way their intention they may think, but the first place, cut off the root. You don't cut off the grass only on the top or weeds on the top. You have to take it out from the root. Your intention is good to take out the weeds, but if you chop it up, it will grow again more and more, and but you have to take it out from the root. Then it will be yours. So the root is what? Krishna is the root. So we have to take shelter of the root, not some little here, little there. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
Master, just adding on to Prabhu's question, if their intention is wrong, but sometimes we also encourage it, right? Like for example, bottled water. It's not like all of ISKCON devotees are not drinking bottled water because the intention is wrong. So how do we, going to Prabhu's point, 25, 30 years later, if there is no clean air and we're drinking, we're breathing bottled air, do we as devotees use the bottled air or not support a chemical industry because it's wrong?
No, we have to drink, we have to survive. So if we survive ourselves with taking the clean water, then we can give them some knowledge and some light in their heart, brains, that this is not. So we have to be pure ourselves also, so that we can give them some enlightenment. So not to pollute the things. But it's not very easy, but everything, our whole atmosphere is polluted, then we have to survive, and not that we are going to take polluted water and leave the world as soon as possible so we don't have to see. No, it is our duty to give enlightenment to everybody. What is the reality? There are very handful of people who can teach this knowledge, give this knowledge. So that is very important. We have to do this. People are trying to say that, okay, we do the recycling of the plastics, but then they are selling the plastics. If they want to take out the plastic, they should not have anything made of plastic. That is the reality. The cars are important. So they are seeing that the gasoline is clean so that car doesn't create so much carbon dioxide, which is not needed. and then they are cutting down the trees. So the trees, there is no forest to absorb the carbon dioxide. So they are doing, creating one thing and they are losing another thing. And making the world, and then getting the cattle there to the slaughterhouse and use the byproduct of the slaughterhouse, they are doing something else. And killing the cows, cutting the forest, cutting the, to make the slaughterhouse more prominent, they are doing genetically modified grains. So that is going to hurt the liver. They are thinking we'll feed the meat to the people. But then they are creating sickness for the people. What are they doing? Why they have to genetically modify? What is the reason? There is only one sense gratification, only the money and sense gratification. How I can enjoy my senses? But they cannot. They are so foolish, they cannot enjoy. Instead of enjoying it in a real way, they're trying to temporarily look for here and there enjoyment, but they cannot. Does that answer your question?
Not fully, Mataji. My question is more to do with, in terms of companies that are not doing the right thing right now,
mm-hmm.
And then sometimes unknowingly or knowingly, we support those companies also. So my point is, like, what do we do? Because it is very difficult for us to reach that stage. Like, for example, companies are, like, plastic, as you said. Now, we can't be a stage as, I'll speak about my...
We can avoid as much...
Eliminate completely plastic out of my life, knowing that it is bad for the environment. I can't do it because...
Because that is all you have available.
Exactly.
So you have to take.
So my question was, is that the...
But we can avoid as much as possible. Avoid as much as possible. Everything is contaminated, but you have to live. So, do what we can do. Not that we're going to full support, give them full support, but we have to do, take the needful. Isha vasyam idam sarvam. Take the needful, what you have to get. That's the way. Is that now, Mick? Okay.
Coming back to Mathis' question, sometimes family members are not very supportive, and that's usually for almost for everyone have that issue. So, as a devotee association and how can other devotees also help each other so that we can make each one's family members also Krishna conscious in a practical way?
If I've gotten your question correctly, that how devotees can help each other. So
because everyone has that issue that family members are mostly not supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever we see that's a
it's very rare that family members are not. Many people are very supportive.
So, those other devotees help also, Madhi, or be a part in which?
Well, it mostly depends on the person who wants to be Krishna conscious. They should take the association of devotee as much as possible. And that way they get the strength. And then when going home, they can do certain things. But if somebody is against, they cannot say, invite the devotee at their home. That won't be practical. So that way devotee cannot help. The devotees can help only, they have to take association of the devotee. So they learn more, their hearts become more stronger, their consciousness becomes more and more stronger. So then their hearts are purified, then they can have Krishna's power. Krishna gives them the strength how to deal with these things. But they have to practice themselves very diligently. then Krishna comes in there. Just like for the example about the sparrow. A little sparrow who lost the eggs in the ocean and she wants the eggs. How determined she was to get the eggs back from the ocean. She felt like that she will dry the ocean if my eggs are not there. So we can understand, if my life is not successful as a human being, then I have to do something. I have to make it successful. And human life is only successful when one becomes God conscious. There is the only way. The human birth is for that purpose only. To become God conscious. Out of how many millions of species of life, the human life is the topmost. And what we live like that, we are living like another way. Another species. We are trying to imitate birds. We are trying to imitate. So if you want to become God conscious, then you have to take that proper association. That's how the devotees can help. And if somebody is very determined, they will try to help the devotees in their home also to have the kirtan. You see? Have the kirtan, distribute prasadam.
Maharaji, I'm just very stubborn. Once I saw that this is the direction I wanted to go in, I was like, well, I'm just going to do it. And some people will accept it, some people won't accept it.
Exactly.
The people who I know won't accept it, if they ask me about it, I'll tell them. But I usually say, well, you know, I'm interested in Eastern spirituality, because that's all they can handle.
Yes.
That's all they understand.
Yes.
And the people who do get it, I might even bring them here, as I bring some friends here each week to see if I think they have the mentality to understand the philosophy or the open-mindedness. I try to bring them and try to expose them to it.
Yes.
And then I just keep doing it in little ways, reading the books, a little bit of chanting, that kind of stuff, where I can.
That's the way it goes, yes.
I come here every Sunday. So
and the family members, but with the family members it's kind of a little difficult, but you still... If one is determined, everything can happen because Krishna is in control. Krishna is in control.
I'm too stubborn to do anything else.
Yeah. I was very stubborn also. I did it and then I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. If you don't like it, I'll go somewhere else and do it. That's what I said. And this is what I said to my parents. And my father was a little positive, so he said, I will make all arrangements for you, don't worry, you don't have to go. And then with all the non-devotees, I had to practice on my own. But then they were curious what I'm doing. They would come and see what I'm doing. Every morning they will come at 4:30 a.m. After some time their curiosity was gone, but then they started taking prasadam. I cooked prasadam, all did on my own, and then I will give everybody little. So one day my father says, this taste, they were also cooking the same kind of preparation that I would, but I will give my prasadam little. So one day my father says, why do we have to cook separately? This tastes much better. So let it all have prasadam. So everybody was taking prasadam. So it is one's determination.
I have a question. If a prasadam is given to you, is it wrong to share it with other people?
Krishna prasadam?
Yeah.
No, you can share it. That's the... you can say... undercover preaching, giving prasadam.
Do you have to share, or do you have to share and then consume? Is there anything like that?
It's nothing like that. You can consume. You can consume. If nobody is there, you can consume. But if there is somebody, you share it. You share it. So even somebody takes little prasadam, they may be sinful, but that prasadam has benefit. Maybe in the next life they will progress a little bit. You see?
What if they refuse to take prasadam?
then you don't offer them. Don't tell them that it is prasadam. Then you should secretly make the offering very quickly before they see. And then give the prasadam. Don't tell them that it is prasadam.
Don't tell them that God has a secret ingredient.
It's a secret weapon.
I'm trying this new recipe out. You want to taste it?
It's a secret weapon, prasadam. Because everybody likes to eat. So it's a secret weapon. I remember Prabhu one time, there was a Christian man, a Hindu Christian, who was converted Christian. So he was taking prasadam to him. So Hindu, being a Hindu, he knows that because we are Krishna conscious, so there must, it must be prasadam. So for good cause, he offered it to him. Then he said, is this prasadam? Then just to benefit him, he said no. Then he took it. And he ate. So that was his benefit. It was not hurting him. So even if you say little, you can say little white lie, it was good, it was for his benefit.
Mataji, in the note of prasadam, what should we do if someone gives us prasadam that is offered to demigods? Like, they had their own prayer at home, and they say, no, this is prasad, we offered it. What should we do in such a situation?
Personally, I wouldn't accept, because the demigods don't take prasadam. It's not prasadam. Because demigods don't eat without being offering, or if it's not offered to Krishna. Especially Lord Shiva, all the hobgoblins comes and eat, and Ganesha, all the rats comes and eat.
But what do we tell them then?
Well, I don't have that.
Because we have that a lot.
I can say, okay, I am fasting. I'm fasting today.
But Mataji, like, in the sense, but isn't the prasad offered to demigods better than not offered to anybody at all?
But demigods have not taken it.
But if they're devotees of Krishna...
But they have not taken it.
No, but weren't they directed to Krishna?
Huh?
Like...
But they are not your servant.
No, not... I'm saying
their servant, even their servant, they are not their servant to take their offering and offer it to Krishna. They are not their servant. They don't eat.
I have an interesting one. Like, since it's kind of Christian-dominated society currently, you know, like, people will ask you to, you know, pray and stuff like that. And I was deployed this one time, and I was in a flying unit. So a pilot, we're sitting in a minivan before you get on the jet. The pilot's a big Christian, so he always wants to pray. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. So, but he's very, like, Southern Baptist, which just kind of makes me sort of uncomfortable that way that they do. But I thought, do I get off the bus like a couple of these people are and don't participate in the prayer? Or do I at least support, because they think they're doing something for God, do I stay here and just pray in my own way?
Yeah, if they're worshiping God,
yeah.
If they may be doing wrong way even, then we can participate and gradually we can do. But demigods are different. In the Indian culture, there are 33 million demigods. 33 million. Demigods means they are the department heads. Like a department heads. Not the CEO. So, yeah.
So then, Mataji, just coming back to the demigod question, because I have some boxes in my house right now, so I don't know what to do with it. But if it is not offered to demigods, can I offer it to Krishna? Because if nobody has actually, if it's not offered...
But...
I'm just curious to know.
How can you offer it?
Sorry, what's
it? How can we offer it? Because they have eaten it.
That's the thing, I don't know. And it's hard because, you know, from their perspective, they say, oh, we made this with our onion garlic and we offered it. Then I could say...
No, then you have to tell them, you have to educate them. When I come, I will make the offering for you. I will make the offering for you. Please don't touch it. I will come to your home. Or go a little early. Go a little early. And help them out and make the offering to Krishna. Train them. And then you offer it to the demigods. Then they will be very happy. That's a way to avoid those kind of things. If you are going to go to their program, go early. It's not that you don't associate. Go early and do some practical side on your own too. So that way they will benefit. Like when we started preaching, we were going to people's home who are not devotees. And we will stay there. So what we do? We will train them how to cook, or we will cook ourselves, offer it to Krishna and tell them this is Krishna prasadam, it's so good. And if they have demigods, we'll offer to the demigods afterwards. And then we also partake the prasadam. And that way they learn. I know one family, now they have become devotees, complete devotees. This is how it is. We go to their home. That's the practical side. Go early. If they are our friends, go early.
So, Mataji, just a clarification question. Your altar at home should have Krishna at the highest level and then the demigods at the next level?
You could do that. That's what I meant to say, that you go early, offer it to Krishna first, and then the demigod will take prasadam.
So how, when everybody is located in the same altar, how do you offer prasadam to just Krishna and...
You invite Krishna. Okay. You invite Krishna. The demigods are not going to take anything. They will... If somebody is worshipper of demigods, they will sit there, wait. Demigods are not so greedy, they won't take prasadam unless the Krishna gets it.
So worshipping demigods?
But worshipping a demigod is not very intelligent. Okay. It's like bribing the different events. In India it happens, even in the... country itself, in the governmental situation, they go on bribing this person, that person, that person, that department to get the work done. It's like worshipping demigods. Department heads are saying, okay, you give me such money, then I will fulfill your desire. So the demigods are like that. When we are so less intelligent, we want material benefit, we'll go and worship demigods. We want material sense gratification. That's the reason we go to demigods.
So, Mataji, so what is the right way? If you have demigods already in your home altar, so what is the right way to worship?
Not to create agitation in the home. Keep them on a lower level, put Krishna on the top, leave them, instead of creating agitation.
And that should be okay.
Yeah. And you should know that they are servants of Krishna, they are there.
Question, according to Indian mythology, it's...
No, Indians don't have mythology.
Yeah, like I'm saying.
They say that. Yes, that is on the material platform. That's what they do. When we go to Krishna, then when worshipping Krishna is like watering the root. And there's all the demigods, Ganesh, Shiva, Durga, is for the people who do not understand Lord Krishna. Because Vedas are giving, if they have to do something. Because by worshipping this Pancha Upasana, they call it, worshipping of Surya, Durga, Lord Shiva, Ganesha, Lakshmi, the four material benefit, at least they come to some pious stage. But even nowadays, the people who are worshippers of demigod, they are not even coming to pious stage. They also eat meat. They go like, it's like worshipping demigods 4 days a week, and then 2 days again, certain days, okay, there's no worship, we're going to eat, have the meat. But they don't get the prasadam. And as long as we don't offer it to Krishna and eat, we are committing pap. That is said in the Bhagavad Gita, that my devotees are released from all pap because they eat only food that has been offered in the sacrifice. You see? So even if you worship demigods in the morning to remove all the obstacles, Ganesh is for that.
So isn't it, everyone says that all gods are same? So,
who said?
Everyone says all gods
yes,
are same.
Yes, right? Because they are Mayavadis. Everything is one.
Right.
But you and him, they are individual or one? Are you one? No, that's they can include themselves also. We know that. They include themselves also. So they what they say, today you have forgotten, you are going playing hide and seek, it's just a dream, but you are yourself is God. Because, why they say that? Because we are part and parcel of God. We are all part and parcel of God. Individual particles. Just like sun has many rays. So the demigod worship is that they think that I'll worship, you worship anybody, you'll be same. But nobody can give you liberation from all the sinful activities. Nor the if you will see the history that you call mythology, but it is history. Worshippers of Lord Shiva are mostly demons. Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Vritasura. Because they want that opulence. That's the reason. And Durga Devi, they want something else. Lord Shiva also, they go to Lord Shiva to get a beautiful wife or beautiful husband, handsome husband. So there is reason, and they pray, remove all obstacles. Then why you create sinful activities that you have to pray to demigod to remove it? Krishna is saying, I can release you from all sinful activities. Just do what I'm telling you to do. Man manabho mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. Become my devotee and I will release you from all sins. There is no reason. There are 33 million. How many you can worship? They are not all one. Of course, you worship Krishna, then everybody will be included, because they are all part and parcel of Krishna. You see?
Mataji, on one hand we say that do not associate with people who are, you know, who are not following the path or who are not devotees. You know,
I didn't say that.
But I mean, do not associate with, people who are in the worldly activity or materialist.
Do not associate. No. We go, but do not associate on their level. Associate, but don't associate on their level. There is a difference. You have to go to job. But you're not going to sit and chat all nonsense. And you are not going to engage in the activities that they are doing, sinful activities. But you're going to give them gradually the good advice. You see? That make clear?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that we're going to cut off all the world, no.
Right, I was going to ask, if you say, well, do not associate or, kind of like not eat their food or something. But then the purpose is also to be with them.
Yes.
You know, to kind of like, you know,
to help
share,
them.
Yeah.
To help
so
them.
So it's kind of like, I mean, it's kind of seems conflicting.
You let us put it this way. If somebody is drowning, you don't go down, pulled by them, but you save them. That's okay. Sometimes you are saving somebody, and if they are pulling you down, you have to give up that. Okay? In the drowning example of drowning, if a person, a drowning person has more strength sometimes. If you are not strong enough, it's better leave them. Save yourself at least. So in the material world, everybody is drowning. Save those which you can save them first.
So you have to kind of pick and choose who you want to help.
You don't pick and choose. You approach everybody.
Mm.
You approach, you associate with everybody. And see who is more in a condition that you can save. Like Gurudev gives an example of army.
Mm.
In the battlefield, there is the doctors go there? Medics.
Mm.
Who they save first? The one who is about to die, or the one who is less injured, they will save the first one who is less injured.
More likely to survive.
Yeah, those were my. So that's how we have to see. But if you are not able to survive anybody, then you save yourself. First, you save yourself, then you will know how. Any other question?
Mataji, in today's teaching, right, Prabhupada was saying, if you perfect your love with Krishna, then all other relationships, love, will be perfected as well. Can you explain a bit on that, please?
When you develop love, I would say, if you want to hear the reality, loved ones don't leave. So loved ones will always remain with you. So you may have some attachment with somebody. They leave the body, you may think they are the loved ones. But if they were loved ones, they would not have left you. So our love, we should develop our love, that love will remain eternally. That means the loving relationship we have is like with the temporary body. So we have to develop our love with the soul. Then that love will remain eternally with us. That's the point we have to do. We have to develop the love with the soul and the super soul. And then in all circumstances you will be happy. You will not be bewildered.
Love the soul, I mean, so our soul or every other soul?
All the jivas.
Okay.
All the jivas. We have to love all the jivas. I mean, that's why we need to save them.
And all the super souls residing within there?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't have to worry about the super soul because super soul we are, but we have to, in a way, we love the soul that we can save them so they don't have to take another birth and die again. So our love is shown that we are seeing, taking care of them, they can go back home to their original place. And we will feel jubilant when we have done that service. We'll feel happy that at least I have saved one soul that has gone back to home, back to Godhead. Now that soul doesn't have to take birth. You won't feel sad about it. You see? That's our love. So why we have few loved ones, we should have everybody. Not only human also. We have so many animals. They are slaughtering cows and... one thing I have noticed in Toronto, I think. Is it in Toronto? They are putting the posters on the train and everywhere. That why you eat one and that... why you love one and hate one. Something like this. Yeah. They are showing the cows one side and a dog and a cat. And they say that the animals don't have soul. But all the jivas have. All the jivas are jivas. Why we love one and why don't we love another one? That means we are not seeing that... we are seeing that I am creation of... I have my loved ones and I don't have... These are not my loved ones. That means there is the discriminations. That means duality. Love, hate. I hate you. You see? That's where it comes. You are not mine. I, me and mine is the whole disease. Brings animosity with the country, nation to nation, sometimes in the family members also. Then neighbors to neighbors, and then nation to nation, country to country. It goes on everywhere. Hate, love. Because I'm seeing that this is not mine. Of course it is not yours. But certain place you are attached. Certain place you are attached. Certain thing, certain which gives me my senses some pleasure, it is mine. It gives my some gratification to my senses. So, does that answer? Okay. By loving Krishna and serving Krishna.
Thereby we don't judge people. Thereby we don't judge people.
Yes. You have to develop your love for Krishna. Just like in the lecture it was mentioned, when you water the root, all the leaves and branches become nourished. When you feed the belly, then all the parts of your body gets nourished. By chanting, that's why I was saying, in the 14 words, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in the 14 words, the holy name should be heard. So that's why we are chanting as loud as we can, so that this vibration and this effects goes around everywhere to purify the atmosphere.
So Mataji, one may be very Krishna conscious, but they know somebody who is doing all sort of nonsense. So how would they love that person?
They love as a jiva. This jiva is so ignorant and he won't take it. They love that jiva also. They have no discrimination. But he says in the Bhagavata Gita, what is that verse? Pandita Samdharshina. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmani gavi hastini suni cheva swapake cha pandita samadarshina. Pandita sees even. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmani gavi. Brahmana, cow, dog, dog eater. He sees everybody. Dog eater is very sinful. Cow eater is very sinful. But they see this foolish people, they are doing nonsense. That's all.
So what does that exactly mean? Like, okay, well, this person is doing nonsense, but I still love them, but I have to stay away from them because I cannot help them.
Yes.
So what does that mean? I mean, where is the love?
Love is that you don't hate that person.
Okay, so
like in Bible it says, you hate the sin but don't hate the
Hate the sin but not the sinner.
Yeah. That's all. You see?
So even though you are partial, I mean, even though you are impartial to them, I mean, you don't do anything for them.
Yes, we do it.
Okay.
We do it. We are doing it. Just like we approach everybody with the Bhagavad Gita or any small book, we're begging them. Why are we begging them? Because we love them. Whether he's a sinner or what, whoever it is, we beg them. Somehow or other, we are trying to give them, inject this knowledge into them. That is love. Otherwise, what the devotees can work and get money and eat themselves, why they have to go? They are taking their, because they love the, all the living entities to go out, give them, doing harinam, so that, their consciousness can be purified. They take so much austerities because they love. It's not fun. Sometimes some people say bad words to them. Sometimes some the, if we go to door, they shut the door on the face. They do so many things. But yet, the devotees take that austerity to go and give them, try to give them this knowledge, how they can save themselves. So that is called love. Okay? You want to say?
Very
you want?
Nice. You did very well, I think.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. So we can end, I think, here. It's getting late. It's 7 o'clock. Okay.
Rajivadis. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Jai.